From the album Angel Headed Hipster, the songs of Mark Bolan and T-Rex, Joan Jett right there, doing a nice interpretation of Jeepster here on Undercurrents. Mount Kimby, Somehow She's Still Here, featuring James Blake, and it was Spoon in there with On the Radio. From Lucifer on the Sofa, Spoon.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with luminaries in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Before we get to today's show, I want to announce our Camp KBOO Summer Membership Drive here at the station, which is going on now through June 29th. We're focusing on making Camp KBOO Summer memories by bringing our communities together. KBOO is commercial-free, volunteer-powered radio made possible by people like you, and together we can keep the station alive and thriving for many years to come. It's been 56 years and counting, but we need your support to continue delivering quality independent programming. Help us reach our $50,000 fundraising goal. Just go to kboo.fm/give, and we thank you for your support. Today, we're going to visit with an expert on the psychedelic renaissance that's happening. Psilocybin, LSD, DMT, ayahuasca, ketamine, MDMA, and other psychedelic substances are becoming more common for therapeutic use. Our guest wrote an incredible book looking at their history, as well as the multitude of scientific studies currently providing evidence for psychedelics' ability to treat addiction, depression, anxiety, and trauma, and their potential to treat neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's. Our guest is Anton Gomez Escolar, author of the new book, The Psychedelic Reawakening, How Psilocybin, MDMA, Ketamine, LSD, and DMT Are Changing Lives. Anton is a psychopharmacologist who works on psychedelic research, drug education, and harm reduction. He is the founder of Drogopedia and has worked at organizations like Energy Control and the European Union Drugs Agency, and has presented on psychedelics at several international forums, including the European Parliament and the United Nations. He is a member of UNAD Global Drug Policy Commission and co-founder and board member of the Spanish Society of Psychedelic Medicine and the INAWE Foundation for Psychedelic Science and the Psychedelic Society of Madrid. Wow. Anton, you're busy, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
Thank you very much for having me here, Paulo. It's a big pleasure. Thank you for reading such a long introduction. I feel very humble.
Okay, let's start by asking, who is your intended audience for this book, Psychedelic Reawakening?
Well, I want to reach people that is interested in mental health, in science, people that maybe have been hearing about psychedelics in the last few years, but they don't know like what's going on, like in a more complete image, and they want to know like what's going on, all the different parts of this psychedelic renaissance, like the social part, the historical part, the scientific part, the mental health part. So all the different areas that are now being pushed forward by the use of psychedelics. And this book is like a 360 degrees review of all that is happening with psychedelics nowadays, where all this comes from, and what is the likely future for all this field.
Yeah, it's an amazing work. It's so full of information. So what inspired your own journey into psychedelic research and harm reduction? And how did your journey inform your perspective?
Well, it was my own self-exploration with psychedelics that made me discover that this world was full of really interesting things that need to be explored and need to be scientifically researched and need to be brought to people in medicinally developed ways, like psychedelic assisted psychotherapies. In my case, I was suffering a deep depression around 20 years ago, and I was lucky enough to find a psychedelic therapist who offered me to have psychedelic therapy in an underground way. And thanks to this experience, I completely changed my feelings at that time. No, I stopped feeling sad. I stopped feeling depressed, and it was over forever for me. So after that time, I've been happy and living a healthy life. And so I wanted to make this new focus to make this new revolution accessible for everyone, and especially for those patients that are really in need of for innovative cares and innovative treatments in mental health. Because I have the feeling that we are stuck in when it comes to mental health treatment since the 50s, more or less. So we don't have like really good new discoveries in the areas of mental health treatment. And this is one of those discoveries that can completely change and revolutionize the way we approach mental health in our world. That's why I started working in the field of drugs. I did a master's degree in psychopharmacology and drugs. I did another master's degree in public health, and I started writing these books. I started talking about these topics in international conferences like the United Nations, like the European Parliament, and this is my mission nowadays, like to spread the word about this revolution, and to make these people that is researching about these topics, these scientists, to have a better and wider audience, reaching everyone that is mainly interested in this topic.
So what, 20 years ago, I'm just curious, which psychedelic helped you get through your depression?
In my case, my psychedelic-assisted therapy was used two psychedelics. The first one I used was MDMA, which is an amazing emotional opener, heart-opening substance, very interesting. If you use it in a good setting with a good therapeutic structure, it works wonders. And the second one I used was psilocybin. That is like this mind-blowing experience, much much deeper than MDMA, right. But in the other way also a little bit more stronger. And that's why I think it's better to have this first approach with a less powerful psychedelic like MDMA or a pathogenic substance. And then when you feel that you know more or less about the experience, then you can have the second one with this bigger and more powerful or more hallucinogenic substance. No? So in my case, it was these two substances in a psychotherapeutic context, the ones that bring me to a very nice improvement.
Now, we've known about psychedelics for quite a long time. I grew up in the 60s in San Francisco, so I was personally exposed to a lot of things. But why has it taken us so long? Why is there a reawakening? What was the impact of the war on drugs?
Yeah, that's a very, very, very hot topic, because it doesn't make any sense that we have been banning and pushing backwards substances that were very useful in therapeutic in a therapeutic way and very safe in other realms, and we decided also to push them back, to stop them, to ban them, and this all was because of a moral approach to drugs. For example, in the ancient times, in the prehistoric times, the use of psychedelics was probably very, very widespread. Many different societies used them. But in the European continent in particular, in the Mediterranean area, the use of psychedelics was prosecuted by the Catholic Church as an immoral and a dangerous practice. Also, also looking for women that were knowing a lot about plants, about plant medicine, like those witches and all these movements. That was like the first disappearance of psychedelics in the Western world. But also, we had this second disappearance of psychedelics in the Western world that happened in the late 60s and early 70s. And at that time, it was a combination of social movements like the hippie movement, the anti-war movements, the civil rights movement, was also combined with very sensationalistic press and very sensationalistic newspapers, like blaming LSD for all crazy things like women delivering frogs and things that like, were completely crazy, and they were all banned LSD for all these things. Of course, there were also some accidents that really happened, like people taking LSD and falling from a cliff, or people taking LSD and having a car accident, or people taking LSD and having a psychotic break. These things are real dangers of having psychedelics in uncontrolled ways, in uncontrolled settings, but that those were not enough to justify a blanket ban as it happened with psychedelics. The main reason for this ban was a governmental idea that these substances were making young people more rebellious, less obedient, less interested in wars, less interested in things. So they were seen as tools that were making society change at a very fast speed, and that was not very good news for the government at that time, that decided to completely ban it, and also as a way to control these young movements, because you cannot criminalize people protesting against something, but you can criminalize what they have in their pockets. So that was another idea for why to do that. But still, it's something that even today, when we look back and we see how prohibition happened, it's nonsense if we approach it from a scientific way. It's all based on morals. It's all based in politics. It's all based in other things that are not scientific or health reasons that are the ones that should be driving drug policy worldwide. Only scientific and health reasons, not political reasons, as it was the case.
How do you distinguish between recreational and therapeutic use of psychedelics, and why is this distinction important? What is your attitude towards recreational use?
Well, it's a very difficult distinction to make, especially when it comes to psychedelics, because in society, in an attempt to make things easy or simple to understand, they always divide drug use in therapeutic or recreational. But when it comes to psychedelics, the idea of recreational is more blurry. It's more difficult to define, because a lot of people that take psychedelics can have a part of therapeutical experience, also a little part of enjoyment or recreation, another part of a spiritual opening or spiritual experience, another part that can be just about self-knowledge or self-experience. So it's a very simplistic term to define. In my opinion, when we talk about psychedelics, we should make much more different categories, not just recreational and therapeutic. And also we need to be ready to understand that some experiences can have different elements into them that are different. So meaning one experience can combine the recreational, the spiritual, the therapeutic, and even the self-awareness. So everything can be mixed into a single experience. So it's difficult to divide. But when we talk about what happened when we talk about recreational use is usually the use that is perceived to be outside of a therapeutic setting, or is not like under supervision from a medical doctor or from a practitioner or from a therapist. This kind of use of psychedelics that most of the times is not recreational, is just spiritual or other realms. The problem with this is that since there are not a lot of controls when it comes to who is the person taking the substance, what is the context where the person is at the moment, what is the set and setting of this situation of the person,
and what is the dosage too? I can say from personal experience, I took so much LSD when I was young, and I never thought of it as recreational, although I had some great experiences. But I always thought of it as being kind of mystical. You know, I always learned a lot. I think the one psychedelic, if you want to call it a psychedelic, that kind of blurs the distinction the most is MDMA, because it definitely has been used recreationally. In fact, you know, that's what it's famous for. But I think the other ones are so powerful. You know, it's not necessarily fun. You know, what would you say? You know, you've heard people talk about having a bad trip. And this is something that people sometimes worry about. What makes that kind of experience happen?
Well, bad trips, I prefer to reframe them as difficult experiences because it's not necessarily for them to be bad at the end of the story, no? Meaning that you can
Right,
have a
right.
bad experience at the moment, but maybe it becomes one of your most learning experiences of all your entire life after a few months of integration. Meaning that it's not going to be your feeling at the moment. You're going to feel horrible, but a few days later, after talking with a professional about this thing, you can use that as a very learning experience, no? But a bad trip, usually it comes from different problems in the set and the setting. So in the context of the person using and in the mindset of the person using. So most
Right.
of the times it's just the person that is using the psychedelic that is not ready to have a psychedelic experience. Many times it's just they are in a music festival, someone offers them a blotter of LSD or a drop of LSD or whatever, and they just take them without thinking a lot about it, and they are in a horrible place, like with a lot of people screaming, a lot of lights. They don't have any control over the environment. They cannot switch off lights, they cannot switch off music.
Right.
So they are like, you feel like powerless, and you feel the chaos around you, and this can bring you into a really difficult situations. Other times the setting and the space is perfect, but the person is not in a very well mental state before taking the substance, meaning that the starting point is already a little bit unstable. And this instability at the beginning can increase a lot during the experience and make things much more difficult. For example, a very simple thing. You're going to have LSD, and then you remember that your mom is going to call you probably in a few hours to ask, how are you? And then you start having some anxiety, panicking a little bit, what I'm going to say, he's going to discover, whatever. Or, for example, people that start feeling that they are going crazy and they don't have a supportive professional next to them to assure them that they are not getting crazy. And they start looping, I'm getting crazy, I'm not going back ever, this is going to be like this forever. And this makes people suffer a lot.
Right.
So there are many reasons for a difficult experience. We have, for example, in Europe, and I guess in the States also as well, a team that is, in this case, is called Cosmic Care, that works in music festivals, offering trip sitting for people that is having very difficult experiences. And we are specialized in bringing people down when they are like in one of these difficult states.
Right. Well, that's good. Now, you know, a lot of mental health disorders are correlated with overactivity and something that's called the default mode network. And this includes depression and addictions and OCD. You know, I've always been a little bit confused about this default mode network. And, you know, what is it? Can you explain to us what the DMN is?
Well, the default mode network, as it names signals, is a network that switches on when we are in default mode, when we are not doing anything specific, like when we are daydreaming, just thinking about our things. The thing is that this network is a very important network, connects many different areas in the brain in between, and also is very related with the compartmentability of the brain. So having like a very specific area that is working in something, having another area that is working in the other something, the default mode network is kind of coordinating these activities that are isolated in different areas of the brain. What happens when we are in let's say, a regular state, our default mode network might be switched on if we are just relaxing and thinking about our life. But the minute we have to start a task, then the default mode network switches off and lets our brain work towards a goal. For people that is having depression, anxiety, that is having an addiction, for these people, this network is overactive. So it's all the time super active. And this makes for them very difficult, for example, to feel that they are here and now. So to feel like here I am, I'm doing whatever. They are always in their own heads, thinking and thinking and thinking and thinking. It might be thinking about a drug that you want to purchase, like heroin or whatever. You might be thinking about how bad your life is and how mistreated you have been during your life. If you have, for example, depression, we can be like how horrible it's going to be, whatever thing you're going to do if you are feeling, for example, anxiety. So the thing is, you are always in your head rolling and rolling and rolling. This is what is called rumination, and it's very common in mental illnesses, especially in this kind of like depression and anxiety.
And what is psychedelics? And, what is the impact of psychedelics on that?
Psychedelics are able to destabilize or kind of switch off, but we a more correct term is to destabilize the activity of the default mode network. So it means that it frees the brain from the control or the rigidity that the default mode network is giving to your thoughts. Another thing that is very important is that your ego, your sense of self, your all that is placed anatomically is placed in your default mode network as well. So that's why when you're having a psychedelic experience, apart from having like a break from your usual thinking pattern, you're breaking your usual thinking pattern, you're thinking outside of the box in a literal term. In literal terms, you're thinking outside of the box because you're thinking completely in a different way as you used to. You are also deprived from your self-identity. And this is very, very helpful because many, many problems in mental health comes along with a wrong idea about yourself, a misunderstanding about yourself, and feeling free from that gives you the possibility to be more honest with yourself, to be free from prejudices, to feel in a different way, and to think about your problems from a different light, from a different perspective. And this is what psychedelics do most of the time. They change our perspective in a way that you are able to reestablish a new feeling, a new way of feeling yourself.
Yeah, they say that the ego, you know, the ego just wants to be in control. This is what we identify with. But that they often describe psychedelics as causing the dissolving of the ego or the death of the ego, which the ego can find threatening. In fact, Richard Lewis Miller, I was just on the show. He was just on the show a couple months ago. He wrote a book, Psychedelic Medicine at the End of Life. And he makes the point that the psychedelic experience actually prepares us for the actual death that we're going to go through at some point or another. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a very promising line of research. Actually, it was one of the first uses of psychedelics in the 50s and 60s to prepare people that is suffering from cancer, terminal cancer, late stage cancer, to prepare them for receiving the death. And the results were impressive. It worked wonders with this kind of patients. And also it was replicated decades after, for example, in New York University or in Johns Hopkins University. Those two universities ran studies on late stage cancer patients. And the results were super, super, super good ones. I mean, people like around 80% of the participants were no longer depressed after a single experience with psilocybin. And this state persisted until the day of the death, meaning that it was working like an antibiotic, like it was like destroying like the illness in that point. And also in Europe, for example, now we have a public funding for a study that is called SciPal, that is a study running in different European countries, and is founded by the European Union with this 6.5 million euros for researching the uses of psychedelics for end of life treatment, no, palliative care.
Wow, that's fantastic. And what about microdosing? You know, Tim Ferriss claimed that the billionaires he knows, almost without exceptions, use hallucinogens on a regular basis. And I think he's talking about microdosing LSD or something like that.
Yeah, he's talking both things, like the big psychedelic experience and also, of course, the microdosing that is very trendy,
okay,
especially in very innovation environments, no? Like Silicon Valley, Wall Street, places where you need to be like ahead of others, or you're competing with in creativity
right.
and
creativity,
in performance.
Yeah.
But if we look just to the science that is being published until now, which is not a lot of science, we have to say this is very early research, it seems that most of the power of microdosing comes from the self-belief that people have in the microdosing. So we can say that, in a sense, for the time being, it looks like it is mostly a placebo. But saying this doesn't mean that it is not useful, because probably it's going to be useful. And I really believe that microdosing may be useful in a future. But I think from that we don't have the scientific tools that are precise enough to detect subtle changes that probably are happening.
I see.
And these subtle changes are more difficult to quantify, because most of the studies that we do nowadays is self-reporting studies. So it's like, how you feel today? You feel one, tomorrow you feel two. This is very subjective.
Right.
It's very difficult.
Right.
Very difficult to make this like a very concise and precise tool. But for example, if we look into precise things, we can already say that microdosing with LSD has been shown that to increase a little bit the release of brain-derived neurotropic factor. That is a growth factor for neurons, that is kind of a neurons fertilizer. We know that small doses of psychedelics are able to increase this neuroplasticity and increase the production of these trophic factors in the brain. So this is good news, because it means that maybe microdosing is not going to be very useful, like to become like a CEO, super creative or super fast, but maybe it's going to be useful to delay the onset of mental neurological problems, like, for example, Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's. So maybe in the future we can have these microdosing protocols tested in elders in order to see if they are able to sustain a longer mental or neurological health compared with others that are not taking microdosings.
Well, we've only got about a minute left, and so why don't we close our conversation by asking you, how does the future look for psychedelics?
I think the future is bright, really. Bright, bright, bright. I just hope that people is not going to be over expecting about psychedelics, because this is not going to change the world completely. But I think it's going to be a very helpful technology that is going to have many different uses. And hopefully, this is going to transform into an improvement for humanity.
Fantastic. Hey, well, thank you so much. There's so much more we could explore. Your book is encyclopedic, and it's very well written. It's easy to read. I highly recommend it. But for today on our show, we've run out of time. And I want to be sure to tell our listeners about your website, which is AntonGomezES.com. Anton, AntonGomezES.com. I imagine the ES stands for España. Okay. And I'm going to say, for those who may have tuned into our show late today, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of Intuitive Intelligence, a book that shares the theme of pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. Now, don't worry, you can play and or share this interview whenever you want, via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today we've been visiting with Anton Gomez Escolar, author of The Psychedelic Reawakening, How Psilocybin, MDMA, Ketamine, LSD, and DMT Are Changing Lives. And I want to say a heartfelt thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast on KBOO.FM in Portland, Oregon. Or perhaps you subscribe to the podcast version, which you can find at divination.com. That's divination.com. Where if you like our conversations, you can give us a thumbs up and subscribe on our YouTube channel, which is entitled Pathways Radio. Please feel free to forward a link to your friends. And don't forget that we're kicking off our Camp KBOO Summer membership drive. KBOO is commercial free, volunteered power radio, made possible by people like you and people like me, who's been a volunteer for over 40 years here. We need your support to reach our fundraising goal. Just go to kboo.fm/give. A staple in our community for over 56 years, KBOO is a meeting place for revolutionaries and creatives alike. Show your support by becoming a sustaining member at kboo.fm/give. And thank you. Well, this is Paulo bidding you adieu and reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and podcasts. And thanks again to Anton Gomez Escolar and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.
KBOO Portland. Here we go again, it's the game we love. Play
game. Tune in on the first and third Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. for Winner's Bias, a new show exploring the culture around tabletop gaming. From game nights to conventions,